Good evening and welcome to our second El Cerritos Heights School District School Board Candidate Forum. I'm Terry Washington, one of our elementary computer teachers. I'm here now for, I have Carmen Pepito, one of the best fifth grade teachers from Mary Sycamato School here in Upgrove. She's going to help me tonight ask questions to our candidates. And we're lucky to have two of the candidates from Area 7. We have Carmen Porcina.
Porcina.
Porcina. And Al Rolette. Welcome, gentlemen. Please take a moment to check that your cell phones are off or on silent. We would also appreciate if you would refrain from any comments or applause while the candidates are speaking. Remember, this is not a debate, but a question and answer forum. We're all excited to get to know our candidates better and hear their responses to so many important issues, so let's get started. Ms. Pepito will begin by rereading the instructions that were given to our candidates.
Thank you. I'd like to go over the ground rules before we begin. We will allow a maximum of 3 minutes for an opening statement. Please focus your introduction on the strengths that bring you to the position of a school board member. After an opening statement, we will ask questions that were drawn at random from the collection that has been accumulated from our membership. We have drawn numbers and a rotation has been assigned to each candidate. Each candidate will have 90 seconds to respond to the question. Everyone will have the opportunity to be the first to answer a question. If time permits, we will also ask questions collected from the audience. There's paper on the tables to write your questions. In addition, if we still have time, we will give each candidate a minute and a half for closing. We have a timekeeper with a clock that is visible to all candidates. We would like the candidates to focus on the questions being asked. Please refrain from personal attacks on opponents. Let us agree that we will conduct our forum in an environment of respect for one another. We will begin with your 3 minute opening statement. Mr. Porcina.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here amongst teachers. And I hope there are some counselors in here. Are there any counselors, librarians? Well, we're all educators, and that's what makes it special. My name is Carmen Porcina, and I am running for Board of Education in Trustee Area 7. I have 28 years of direct educational experience as a teacher and as a manager. I had the privilege of working in general education, special education, in alternative programs like community schools, infant education, home hospital education. I worked with Head Start, migrant education, regional occupational training programs, and I coordinated the special education services for all 33 school districts in the county of Santa Clara. And I'm proud to say I was also a CTA chapter president. Throughout my working years, the one thing I learned is that irrespective of good fiscal times or bad fiscal times, there is no excuse not to have positive board and staff working relationships while promoting and maintaining strong educational programs. Over the last few years, I've sat and I've watched what has always been a strong, positive district go, in my opinion, in the wrong direction. While this district had plenty of money, the decisions it made didn't impact people's lives or children's lives one way or another. But as soon as things got difficult from a fiscal perspective, we saw the same decision-making process have a profound and an immediate impact on children's programs, on staff relationships, and on board community relationships. I watched as the implementation of the decisions impacted my own grandchildren's programs, my friends' children's programs. I watched the board continue to behave in a manner that I felt was disrespectful. The administrative team and the board seemed to be out of touch with what the parents were saying, what the staff was saying. And one day, my conscience kept nagging and nagging and said, you have to try to change. I have made the decision that I will utilize my years of experience and my education for the betterment of everyone in Elk Grove Unified School District. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Al Rolette, and I am the incumbent in Area 7. First, I want to extend a hearty thank you to EGEA, EGEA President Maggie Ellis, and the other members of the leadership team, Ms. Hollis and Charlie. Thank you so very much for extending me this opportunity to share my perspective and why, given the difficult economic times and the difficulty that we had last year in terms of our rapport and negotiations, I want to continue as school board member for Area 7. Let me start by saying, in spite of all the things that have happened with our economy, with our relationship, because of you, yes, because of you, Elk Grove is an extraordinary, exemplary school district. I know that because I have five children that matriculated through this district. One who is a vice principal in the district. I have another daughter, all five of those children earned a diploma. I have a daughter who is a sixth grader at Arnold Adriani Elementary School. I am and will always be a consumer of public education. Public education has, in fact, transformed and changed my life. Without public education, I would not have had an opportunity to be today a professor at UC Davis, today a part-time professor at Sac State, and today a mentor, liaison, coach, teacher, trainer at Consumers River College for the faculty, giving me an opportunity to see and realize the things that are expected of our children. I'm proud of the fact that in spite of the difficulty that we had last year and the previous year, we've been able to maintain a classroom size that all of you said was critical and important in the education of our children. I am delighted that in this school district, we have some of the best academies in the world. I am delighted that in this school district, recently on NPR, the president's wife made reference to our school lunch program. I'm delighted that I can still go and visit schools and visit teachers in a manner that is respectful and engaging and demonstrates the positive regard for public education. I state again that we have an extraordinary, exemplary school district because of you. We learned a lot last year, and I continue to pledge that I will keep learning and listening. We are an ongoing work in progress, and I commit to be part of the leadership for you in the future. Thank you.
Our first question is for Carmen. Please identify the stakeholders you communicate with to make informed decisions.
The stakeholders that I would communicate with is everybody who has any level of involvement in the education of children. When I was in Santa Clara County, we had some very, very difficult times. And faced with those difficult times, the approach that I took, and it's the same type of approach I would take now, is to hold meetings with all the stakeholders. That would be the teachers, the parents, the custodians, the secretaries, the business leaders, the heads of community-based organizations. Stakeholder means anybody who is going to be impacted by the decision that the Board of Education is going to make. Stakeholders need to be involved. When you involve all the stakeholders in a decision, irrespective of what that decision might eventually be, you will have support. You will not have the strife that we saw these last few years. When the tough decisions need to be made, they cannot and never should be made from the top down. You involve everybody in the decision-making process from the ground up. And I would commit tonight that I would behave in a way in which I have always behaved. I don't have to learn how to work with people. I don't have to turn a new leaf and say, I'm going to be better. I'm going to change my spots. Trust me, because I have always behaved in a manner that included everybody in the decision-making process.
Folks, the folks I've communicated with, and even during the midst of the difficult, impactful times that have been, your EGA leadership, I'm not a stranger to them. Even when things weren't going well, I could come in and talk to them. And they would, Maggie Ellis and Scott and Charlie would say, and Ms. Hollis would say, and I always say Ms. Hollis because once a student, always a student, Ms. Hollis would say, thank you, Mr. Ouellette, for coming in and listening. I've been the one board member that has sat down with Nancy Clifford and said, Nancy, you come to every school board meeting, talk to us. I talk to parents. I have parents here from my daughter's school who are here because during the difficult times they said, Mr. Ouellette, are you listening to us? And I said, yes. I understand that in the midst of a crisis, it's what you do in that crisis that determines what kind of leader you will be. Prior to one of the most impactful board meetings that I ever had sat in, I had an opportunity to go and visit a teacher at Toby Johnson Middle School. That teacher's back there. I went to visit that teacher because I understand that you have to engage all your constituents. That's not new for me. It's something I will continue to do. And I listen. You can ask them. Ask Maggie, ask Charlie, ask Sheryl, ask Scott. Does Mr. Ouellette listen? And when he listens, does he respond accordingly? If I did not have that as evidence in my background, I could not say that. Thank you.
The next question, Mr.
Ouellette. What is your position on Prop 32, the Stop Special Interest Money Now Act?
Well, as I've said to you before, I'm opposed to Prop 33. Folks, I'm a social worker, one of the original guilds. I understand what's motivating that. How can we, there is already a mechanism in place for people to opt out if they choose not to participate in part of a bargaining. They can do that. You can opt out. That's already there. You don't need to legislate that. So what special interest is motivating that? And why don't we legislate the special interest? We don't. There's a concern in our state that bargaining groups or unions have too much influence. Well, thank goodness you have some influence, because if you didn't, I'm not sure we would have a Prop 30 on the ballot. I am not sure of that. And we know this, if there was no Prop 30, the state of California would turn its back on public education. So I've taken in a very official position. I am opposed to 32. I am not in favor of that, because we understand that that is an attack on unions. It is an attack on unions. It's not subtle, it's overt. So, as a member of one of the oldest guilds in America, and a professor at Sac State, I'm opposed to Prop 32.
That's a question that's very simple to answer. I'm opposed to Prop 32. Prop 32 is just a matter, it's an issue of fairness. It's that simple as I look at it. Everybody needs to have a voice. And without your ability to support candidates, proposition, causes, then all that we hear would be one-sided. So it's just a straight matter of fairness. That was one of the questions I was asked by the Los Rios College Teacher Federation before I got their endorsement. They wanted to know what I thought about Proposition 32. And as I said a minute ago, it's a matter of fairness. So I'm definitely opposed and always would be opposed to that type of legislation.
You might come. Next question's for you.
Teachers have never been consulted in the evaluation of their principals and vice principals. What role do you think teachers should have in that process?
Evaluation is a favorite topic of mine. And what I'm going to say right now, I would say for all positions, superintendent, principal, teacher in the classroom. Evaluation should be a process by which the person being evaluated receives information from those people that they interact with. Therefore, if you're going to have a comprehensive evaluation system, it needs to involve input from everyone that you do interact with. In respect to evaluating a principal, from my perspective, that should include teachers, that should include secretaries, that should include parents, that should include students. It should include everyone in which the principal interacts with. Once again, if you look at evaluation from the perspective of gaining information so that you can do a better job, that cannot be done without the input of all the people you impact. So to me, it's critical to have a valid evaluation that everyone that you impact is included in that evaluation.
Organizationally, we just implemented an evaluation for one of our managers, and we solicited input from the people that he supervised. However, ultimately, one person had the responsibility for completing the evaluation. In the same way that Carmen described that, that's been some of my experience here at Oak Grove. I'll cite one middle school experience recently in which a principal ended up leaving. There was lots of, and I'll describe it as informal, I don't know if it was formal, informal feedback that was received from teachers, students, and parents. That feedback was then given to the person that was responsible for doing the evaluation and integrated into an evaluation product that was presented to the principal. See, in the same way me in private industry solicit feedback and from constituents, from students, constituents, I think that principal evaluation should be done the same way. The question may be, should that be formalized? I think that if you don't have that already as part of what you do as an evaluator, you're not doing a good job.
Mr. Ouellette?
I'll stay here because I think it's more comfortable.
You're going to think we're slow learners.
If you had 5 minutes, Secretary of Education Arne Duncan's undivided attention, what would be the focus of your conversation?
Well, my friend here would say, why aren't you funding special education? Why aren't we funding special education? Here's what happens. The feds say, we're going to fund 40% of what you get for special education. And then they give us less than 18% of what we get for special education. So the rest of it comes out of the general fund. I'd say, keep your promise. Fund special education fully. Second thing I'd say is, NCLB, not working. Not working. It's not working, A, because you don't put the funding associated with it that it's supposed to be here. Number two, there are so many factors associated with NCLB and sustainability that it is impossible to keep up. And then, in order for us to access the funding associated with NCLB, we have to ask people who are, in this area, against public education. You have to get the sign-off on the mayor of the city, in order to submit an application. And some of those folks are opposed to public education. They want charter schools. And then lastly, I say, Arnie, you always come out here to Elk Grove. How come? Because you know we have an extraordinary district. Stop hurting us and the kids that we serve.
Thank you. Certainly, some of my comments are going to be the same as Al's, but a little different. One of the things I think the federal government has to stop doing, and I certainly would communicate that, is quit mandating things that we need to do and then not put the money on the table. When you do that and you tie that to other funding, then you really tie the district's hands with respect to having any flexibility. So that to me is would be an overall kind of an approach I would take, just saying, you know, stop the mandates without the funding. Stop the mandate without the chains. Because if you don't have the funding and you are constrained, then the children in the general education program suffer in many, many ways. Special education has been underfunded since the day IDEA was passed. It just gets less funding every year. It's the same thing in the state of California. And what happens is, once again, the general program is impacted. For every dollar that we don't receive from the state and the feds for special ed, it's a dollar less that's available in general education. For everything, the in-classroom services, even though transportation funding comes down on different mechanisms, you gotta pay for that also. So those two things are really critical. The other thing I would say is please keep Head Start always on the table as a priority. We know the gains that children make. We know the importance of Head Start and early development of children. And I would focus all my comments on what's best for children.
Mike?
I did it.
We're getting this figured out.
EGEA believes this year's school dollars should be spent on this year's students. How do you balance SCOE's requirements of a three-year budget projection with the real needs of students enrolled today?
Okay. First of all, I would change the whole budgeting process. I believe in a concept of zero-based budgeting, which means everybody who has budget development responsibility starts with a blank sheet. They don't start with the previous year's budget and add to it. They don't start with the previous year's budget and maintain it. They start with a blank sheet. And in that process, then what you do is build your budget on the principles set by the board. And you have to come in and, with data, support why you should continue doing what you're doing, why you should do what you do at the level you do it at. And through that process, I believe you would ferret out a lot of extra dollars that could then be utilized for program. I also believe that while it's prudent to maintain a decent reserve, you don't have to have a reserve at the level that this district decided that it needed to ensure its security. So I would one, look at a different budgeting process. Two, I would look at freeing up some of that reserve to meet the immediate needs, because there is a disparity amongst the schools and an inequality in the level of education that's going on in this district between the low wealth areas and the high wealth areas of the district.
I just want to make sure, could you repeat that question?
Absolutely.
EGEA believes this year's dollars should be spent on this year's students. How do you balance SCOE's requirement of a three-year budget projection with the real needs of students enrolled today?
Let me just tell you that with SCOE, the budget projection, three-year budget projection, we are currently have a qualified budget. Meaning that we are a step away from negative and a step away from positive. We're right in the middle. And so that requirement, in spite of the large fund balance, has to be met in order to go forward as a district and have a budget that's approved. If that requirement is not met, then SCOE can do what they've done to surrounding districts and send someone in to take over your district. So we do. Last year, we had the accounting firm of Charlie Chapman and Scott Sidmore. We had school services. We had SCOE look at our budget, because we heard you say that we had too large of an ending fund balance. And the things that they said about our numbers being accurate and what we needed to do in terms of those projections on the ending fund balance, we put into place this year, because this year we have presented a budget that has absolutely no assumptions. It was just presented. Here's the budget. Again, we understanding, we absolutely have to meet the requirements of SCOE. But we had those folks look at our budget, and this year we presented a budget with no assumptions.
Mr. Rolette, teacher morale is at an all-time low, with many of our most dedicated teachers deciding to leave the profession. What would you do to help improve the experience teachers have on campuses throughout our district?
Well, I'll tell you what I did during the low point last year. After the second most impactful board meeting that I had ever sat in my life, I decided to be the leader. Now, understand, I was a leader, but I needed to be the leader. I was the only school board member that went to my daughter's elementary school and said to a teacher who came to that very impactful board meeting, I would like to talk to the staff. Because I felt it was hypocritical for me not to address the morale that was obviously desperately low at my daughter's school. And I talked with every staff member without the help of communications, without the help of the superintendent, and I listened and dialogued with them. I can tell you surely that positional bargaining, that's where we were, did not work. I was proactive and responsive, and I listened. In addition, I came and talked with Charlie, Scott, Shirl, on at least two occasions, to talk about what I could do as the leader going forward for our district and our superintendent. I would continue to do those things now, talking to teachers directly, without the support of the leadership.
Thank you, Al.
The level of morale that currently exists in this district is something that bothers me a tremendous amount. One of the reasons I'm running for the Board of Education is after having many, many talks with teacher friends at many schools. The teachers at Pleasant Grove Elementary, Arnold Adriani Elementary, Sunrise Elementary, Sheldon High School said, please, please, take your background, take your experience, take your knowledge, take your being, and become a board member, and please help us and help the children. I cannot believe what has occurred in this district. This district has always been a shining example of what was right, and it was right because of the dedication and the sacrifices made by the teachers, and they were slapped in the face over and over and over again. When you had furlough days, school opened up and it was seamless to the parents. They didn't realize the sacrifice that had been made because the teachers went in on their own time to make sure school was ready the very first day. I would do with teachers what I have always done. I had the same level of respect from teachers when I was a principal as I was when I was assistant superintendent. And when I was able to become the CTA president, they grabbed me. They said, now represent us differently. Teachers are the backbone of this district, and they would know that I realize it.
All right, another question here. Where do you fall on the creation evolution debate, and what implications does it have for teachers?
Right now, I'm going to let you go first.
I bit you.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, you know, personally, believing in God and being a science teacher, I don't have a problem in subscribing to both theories. I can with concrete thought justify and I believe be able to debate in any arena on that subject. But when it comes to school, I have such very strong feelings that the curriculum needs to be pure, that we shouldn't have conflict within the curriculum. When it comes to the debate of evolution versus creation, then I do believe we have to go along with what's been subscribed to in the textbooks by the state leaders, by the federal leaders, and deal with the evolutionary process as the process by which all of us are sitting at this table today.
I also believe in God, and so when my daughter came home and started talking about early man and evolution, I said, okay, and? She said, and my science teacher's teaching that. I said, okay, and? She said, okay, and I'm learning about it. I said, okay. I learned about it in school also. I also learned about creationism in school. I learned a lot of things in school from my teachers. I subscribe to the theory that you folks, you educators, can provide people with students with information, age-appropriate information, that advances their knowledge and understanding of the information. I think you can do that without proselytizing, without superimposing a personal view on the student. Folks, you teach. That's what you do. You teach. And so I think that you can, if it's in the curriculum, you can teach it. And the way my daughter's teacher is teaching it is that this is one view, this is another view, this is another view. Then they take a test. Did you understand the views? Yes. But in terms of her belief system, that's my responsibility as her father. But in terms of teaching a theory, if it's in the curriculum, it's adopted curriculum. I've been on those curriculum review committees. I don't ever want to do that again. You folks can teach it.
Mr. Rillette, we have a number of schools that are entering year 4 of program improvement. What ideas do you have to suggest as these schools plan for year 5?
Well, program improvement, school of choice, it requires that you throw the plan, the script, out the window. I'm going to borrow a lot of ideas that Ms. Hollis has given me, okay? Also, I want to demonstrate that I'm listening. You got to look at everything, and that includes the school calendar, which is negotiated. You got to begin, okay? Maybe you look at a different calendar for these kids. We have to look at, in Elk Grove, we have historically identified Title I schools and economic impact schools. And the Title I schools get Title I money, but there's a whole lot of schools that are entering year 3 or 4 of program improvement, and they don't get Title I money. We may need to relook at that. We also need to take a look at whether or not we look changing some of our schools into magnet schools. We talked about that at one of our recent board meetings. That's another idea that Ms. Hollis has shared with me, and I said, hey, you're absolutely correct. We're in program improvement. It's time to throw the script out and come up with some different ideas. Now, let me also say we have to look at resources that are being allocated to schools in the state of California in support of program improvement schools. They're inadequate. They're not adequate. We also have to consider that when we think about program improvement.
Program improvement is when you're speaking at the level we're talking about right now, is a difficult issue because of all of the factors that come into play. Certainly, in the lower performing schools, you have to have a very good grasp of the neighborhood, of the condition that the children live in, of the lives of the parents. And you have to bring in those people that can provide direct support and assistance. It's not a matter of the teacher in the classroom being able to resolve the issues for all the children. They only have a few hours of the day. There's so much that impacts the lives of those children that it plays on the child's ability to perform at their level. So what I think is important is that you have to bring resources to the school. You can bring them from community resources like Brain Hurricane and Gear Up and other programs that really focus on families, help the families learn how to structure the environment so the children can do homework, make sure they do homework, bring them to the resources that are available to provide free support services to help them with homework. You can develop volunteer cadres that can have after-school programs, math clubs, reading clubs, whatever is necessary. It's not just a matter of money. It is a matter of, it's an issue of identifying specifically what are the issues that are impacting the child and then looking at the community as a whole.
All right, if Proposition 30 fails in November election, how would you balance a Brogan Park School District budget?
Katie, bar the doors, huh? If it fails, certainly, whichever board members remain on the board, they'll be patting themselves on the back for having that protest reserve, because it'll immediately need to be used. The first thing you have to do is use whatever resources you have. I mean, that goes without saying. Once again, as I said, I would immediately move to bring in all of the stakeholders to say, okay, this is the problem. We need to develop proposals that we can bring as one to the board for consideration. Utilizing everyone's best input, you can come up with solutions. If Prop 30 doesn't pass, those solutions aren't going to be good for anybody. But if you involve everybody, at least you'll have the support for those recommendations that are brought forward. Also, as I had said earlier with respect to budget, I'd like to go back to square one with everybody's budget. Tell them you have nothing. You come to the board. You show us why you need to continue doing what you do. You need to prove that what you do has an immediate impact on the classroom, because we need to protect the classroom at all costs.
If Prop 30 fails, the first thing that we have to know is that, yes, we have a large ending fund balance, and so the remainder of this fiscal year, we would have time to plan and anticipate what we would do if it failed. The first thing I would do and want to make sure of is what is obvious to all of us, and I'm sure you would.
Oh, sorry.
Prop 30 failed. I just knew that was going to happen.
Don't move. I'm going to go hit the button. I apologize.
Okay.
We got so interested in the candidates that we forgot at 7:10 we have to push the button.
This happened last time, too.
It's a creation evolution.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
Oh my gosh. So I got 1 minute and 60 seconds.
You got it.
Oh man. Oh man. Okay, you ready? So where were we? Prop 30 passed or failed? It failed. Okay. So in Prop 30, first thing is kid safety. Everybody agrees. Everybody. Kid safety, number one. Then number two, and we have a year. Number two, the morale of the workforce. I figured that one out. You have to make sure the morale of the workforce, because what happened last year when the morale, and now, when the morale of the workforce is not attended to, then it affects education. So the morale of the workforce. Then number three, I would go with Cheryl Hollis and Charlie and Maggie and Scott and Nancy and those folks and say, and the district folks, and say, we need to go out to our seven regions and talk to parents and teachers
and do regional meetings together with a blank budget and ask them to tell us. Now understand that we all have varying interests. That would have to be very clear up front. But then, initially, but then by going out to our constituents, going to them, and sharing with them, these are the dilemmas, the real dilemmas that we are facing in public education. We would get some feedback and some support and maybe ideas and maybe even a willingness to look at a parcel tax for our district. Maybe, because we understand if Prop 30 fails, they have turned their back on public education.
Mr. Roulette, please interpret the term academic freedom and explain its role in the Elk Grove Unified School District.
Academic freedom, as a professor, it allows me to teach the breadth and depth of the curriculum as I understand it without being confined or constrained by interest. Again, whatever the adopted curriculum is, I should be able to teach that. And within certain latitude, I should have the freedom to teach that in any way I want. So let me give you a controversial sort of issue. Years ago, I'm dating myself, we went through something called Seeking Educational Equity and Diversity. And that, there were groups who were vilified that we were teaching that. It was part of the curriculum. Teachers wanted them to have the latitude to teach what was in the curriculum. And there were people in our community who were adamantly opposed. I said, I'm adamantly in support, it's in the curriculum. The values that my kids have are developed by me. But teaching what's in the curriculum is a responsibility of the teacher. I do not superimpose my belief system on how or what the teacher teaches in the curriculum. I think that you have the freedom to be able to do that, that teach the breadth and depth of the curriculum.
We're pretty much in the same line here. From the perspective of what's within curriculum, teachers should be able to teach that in any way, manner, shape, form that they're most comfortable with, such that they can communicate the children and engage the children in meaningful discussions. With respect to academic freedom, it's not appropriate for you to try to incorporate your own views on individual issues, subjects, beliefs into that curriculum and try to, as a way of trying to convert a child's thinking, and that would be wrong. But within the confines of the curriculum, if it's there, you should be able to teach it in a manner that you're most comfortable with and engages the children at the highest level.
This is one of the questions from our audience. What role should standardized testing play have in the evaluation of a teacher?
The standardized test should just be one cog in a big wheel. Earlier, I touched a little bit on evaluation when we had one question. When it comes to evaluating a teacher's performance in a classroom, I really strongly believe it should be a comprehensive evaluation. We need to involve other teachers, I believe, in the evaluation of a teacher. Even at the upper levels, high school, high school age children, I believe that the evaluations should be multifaceted. We need to look at how well the teacher understands the learning style of each child and whether or not they're meeting those needs. We have to look at teachers' classroom behavior from respect to how they engage the children in learning. Standardized tests alone is not appropriate to gauge any teacher's performance because all of us know that kids come to school every day in different states. Some of them haven't eaten, some of them watch their mothers hit their fathers hit their mothers. The children are often in turmoil when they come to school. If that's a test day, you get a bad score, and that should not reflect negatively on a teacher. So to standardize tests, it's important from the standpoint of a district getting some information with respect to how schools are doing district-wide, but it shouldn't be the only issue
involved in evaluation. Evaluation should be comprehensive.
Do you mind repeating that question, gentlemen?
What role should standardized tests have in the evaluation of a teacher?
It should have just one small role, and I say small because what I understand about the CST, and I'm going to again date myself, is when the CST was adopted, I said, well, we don't need the CASE, let's use the CST. And in fact, what I hope is that we are able to, when Common Core comes around, get rid of the CST and the CASE and have a test in Common Core. Because what motivation does a student have to do well on the test? And yet, you want to use a test that a student doesn't have the motivation to do well on to evaluate the teacher. I'm not completely convinced that standardized testing should be the primary piece of information used to evaluate teachers. I think that peer evaluation, supervisory evaluation, certainly looking at the plethora of work, the breadth and depth of work that a teacher does, and that includes lesson plannings, on-site evaluation. You should get feedback from students and parents when appropriate, and then you integrate that into a very comprehensive evaluation tool for the teacher. Standardized test has one role in that.
Mr. Roulette, we have a question specifically for you,
okay,
for the audience. You said you learned a lot from last year's difficult times.
Yes.
Does that mean you would do things differently if you had it to do over again? Please elaborate.
I only have a minute and 30 seconds to answer that question. absolutely yes. What I would do differently first is, remember I said I was a leader, not the leader. When I took the leadership role, I began to step away from what had been the district's normative pattern of engaging EGA leadership. I said, I've got to have to sit down and talk with these folks independently, myself, to get my own perspective on what's happening. That would be the first and most, the primary thing that I would do. Second thing that I would do is I would say to the superintendent, we have to go out to the schools right now and get a sense of what's happening with the morale of the teachers right now. That's the second thing I said after one of the most impactful board meetings and on March 20th, 2012. Yes, I remember when 90% of you agreed and signed the agreement, voted on the agreement, thank you very much. And the superintendent went to, after that, Arno Adriani Elementary School for a second grade carnival because I said, it's really important that you go to the carnival. It's those kinds of strategies that seem obvious today, but did not seem so obvious then. The other thing that I would do is continue to have those conversations with teachers that I had at Adriani that I have now. And I would go out and do that consistently.
Do you want to answer?
Just respond.
You have 90 seconds.
The same question?
Well, in any way you want, because
oh,
obviously we're on the board.
Yeah, I wasn't on the board. But I can guarantee you, if I'd been on the board, we never would have seen what happened last year and the year before. You know, there's an old expression, a day late and a dollar short, and that's how I pretty much feel with respect to the current Board of Education. They shouldn't have had to have learned the lesson. You have to learn a lesson of respect. You have to learn the lesson of listening. You have to learn the lesson of open communication. Where have you been all your life? What happened last year should never have happened. If I had been there, it wouldn't have happened. And I can guarantee, because of the way in which I have always behaved, that it would never happen. You have to be respectful of people. You have to be honest with people. You have to be open with people. You have to be fair with people. And if you are, what we've witnessed in this district would never have happened. So I think that it's incumbent on the part of a board member to always be open, always be available, always be honest, and always be a part of every school in the entire district. You are not a trustee for one area. You are a trustee for all seven areas.
We have another question from our audience in regards to digital textbooks. How would you propose Elk Grove move forward given its lack of ability to adequately maintain current technology? Meaning, computer resource teacher?
Yeah, no, I have the question. Certainly, digital technology is here. We know its value. We know it's going to be the future. The issue is one simply of how do you pay for it and how do you support it? With the current state of funding, that becomes a really tough issue. Even if we budgeted the way that I would propose to budget, I doubt that we would come up with the necessary dollars to be able to do that in every classroom in the entire district. What we do need to do is try to reach out and establish better school business partnerships. Hopefully, you know, through that process, through the process of the formation of foundations, endowments, there are things that you can do. They take a tremendous amount of time, a tremendous amount of effort. But if we're going to move in that direction at the current level of funding, then we need outside support. And that is another responsibility, not only of the board, but really a key responsibility of the superintendent to get up out of the chair, out of the office, and into the community to interact with the business leaders so that the focus could be on the needs of the school, especially with this question in respect to digital technology.
Certainly, Carmen is correct in many of the things that he said. That's why over 2 years ago, we put together an IT task force comprised of business, comprised of all the surrounding universities, Intel, Microsoft, Apple, and we have a digital plan that's online. You can see it. The only way this district today can come up with a plan to fund digital textbooks and ensure that the kids on the north end of the district, schools that I visit all the time, like Valley, like Union House, like Prairie, and the schools on in Area 7, like Cosumnes River, or Sims, for that matter, have the resources that they need, is to include in our utility budgeting a item for IT. That came from the business community. They said, you have to start treating IT the same way you treat SMUD and PG&E. So we are starting to develop a plan to do that. That costs millions of dollars. But our digital plan with that inclusion has been endorsed by people throughout the country. It's available, it's online. You can look at it. So that's the plan, to pay for digital textbooks with utility dollars.
Thank you. That concludes our question and answer period. And since we have a few minutes left, we'd like to give each of you a minute and a half to have a closing statement.
Let me say, first of all, this has been delightful. I appreciate it very much. I appreciate all of you. And let me say that when reelected, Carmen, some of your ideas, I'm hoping we can work together to put your ideas, some of your great ideas into place, because they're wonderful ideas. That said, folks, again, I want to acknowledge my opponent and his rich history in public education. I want to acknowledge all of you for being here. I also want to say emphatically that I visited schools throughout our district, not just in Area 7. I said that during the most difficult period, I had the privilege of going to Toby Johnson Middle School and visiting the middle school teacher. In all of that, folks, I was never disrespectful to teachers. I have never been disrespectful to teachers. Folks, my late wife was a teacher. I would never disrespect you. We didn't agree, but that disagreement was never predicated upon disrespect. Folks, I am transparent as I will ever be. I want to assure you that I love, you are my weakness. I love public education. and I will continue if reelected to be transparent and respectful going forward for all of you. I thank you for this opportunity. I honor your hard work, and I look forward to serving you again in Area 7.
Thank you. Once again, I just want to say thank you for this really great opportunity to be here tonight. I always feel the most comfortable when I'm with teachers. That's where I was, that's what I am. My closing arguments are simple. If you believe you have the resources necessary to meet all the unique learning needs of the children in your classroom, if you believe you have the materials and supplies to be able to teach effectively every day, if you believe you were treated fairly, if you believe that you were listened to, then I would say vote for the incumbent. You can have more of the same. But if you believe in hope, if you once again want to see this district be the shining star it was throughout the state of California, if you believe in innovation, if you believe in creativity, if you want to see new ideas fostered in a new vitality amongst all the staff, then I believe the choice is simple and you will vote for me, Carmen Forcina, for Area 7. Thank you.
For answering all of these wonderful questions that we've got, both from our membership as well as from the public here. And I also want to make a big thank you to my friends and colleagues for coming to be our moderators. I think they did a great job tonight. So thank you very much. And with that, I want to thank you. You have a lot to think about. This is going to be a very impactful time. This November is critical for us. Prop 30 is going to be a turning point one way or another for our district as well as for the entire state, as well as Prop 32. So the way that I've been told to remember this as a teacher, are there 30 days in a month?
Yes.
Are there 32?
No.
That's how you vote. Thank you, and good evening.
Thank you.